Hi, hello, and welcome to another episode of The Dunker Spot. We are part of 342 Productions. I am your host, Nikias Duncan, and joining me as always is my co-host, Steve Jones Jr. Steve, how are you doing on this frantic Friday?
Feeling good, feeling great, happy to be here, excited to be here. Thank you, Dunkers, for once again embracing your bounce. Dunker Nation, let's ride. Nikias, we are recording this on the eve of free agency, which is always fun.
Mm-hmm.
So let's do our best to hoop it up.
We are indeed going to do our best. We'll throw out the disclaimer just to bounce off of what Steve said. It is a little past 12:30 p.m. Eastern on Friday. So this is being recorded before, teams are officially allowed to negotiate with players and stuff. Mm-hmm. There has been literally no contact until then. All the rules have been followed. I's are dotted, T's across, all that good stuff. So what is it? 6 Eastern is when free agency officially begins and we get to learn more stuff. So I'm excited to react to that stuff next week. Steve, do you have a thought?
Did you just slide a tampering joke in there?
Tampering is a joke. Yes. But at any rate, yeah, I will have this read every year. It's just odd. But anyway, we will have some full blown first wave of free agency reactions on the next pod. So just want to throw that disclaimer right there.
But today earlier, we will have our top 400 free agents live for you, starting with the Charlotte Hornets, right, Nikias?
That's true. Keep an eye on PJ Washington, who is one of... Okay, anyway. We will start with some NBA news, and then we have some W stuff to talk to, because, buddy, did we have a big game in the association last night. Storm Links was really fun. Anyway, we'll start with the Chicago Bulls, who re-signed Nikola Vucevic. They agreed to a 3-year, $60 million deal. Latest reporting on that was no options, no partial guarantees. It's just a straight 360. Vuc is a good basketball player. Averaged 17.6 points per game last year, 11 rebounds, 3.2 assists. The fun thing when looking this up after that was broken, the exact same points, rebound, assists line in two straight seasons. Just blew my mind a little bit. That was fun. Career high on twos for Vooch last year. Went a little bit under the radar. Are you fine with this deal? Because I feel fine with the deal. But I also have thoughts about Chicago. But continue.
You've had thoughts about Chicago this entire run. So I can't wait to hear what your thoughts are. I think I have a taste of what it'll be. It continues the trend of teams looking to keep their own talent, quote unquote, extend their talent, keep those contracts. If we need to move, we can. But let's try and keep you around. I have been higher on what Vooch has done in Chicago than most. Like, I understand I'm in the minority there. But for him to give the same production night in and night out, you mentioned the identical stat line. He shot better. So it's like, hey, you know what you're going to get from me every single night. I think he had one of the bigger shifts, like role-wise, going from Orlando and that usage to having Zach LaVine and DeMar DeRozan and trying to find your way. How are you going to impact the game? Where are your shots going to come from? So I think he gives them great value offensively in the post, pick and roll, pick and pop. He's a hub. I am intrigued because he said he wanted to be more involved offensively. At least those are the rumors. I was like, can the Bulls tap into that? Can they now, do they hit the Kings button and try and do more handoffs with Vooch and keep him more involved? Mm-hmm. But I'm fine with it. Like, I mean, it's market value for a big.
Mm-hmm.
If you are of a certain height, it's hard not to get 10 or 13. You know, if Nurk is at 17, then why can't Vooch be at 20? Like, that's just kind of how it is to me. What were your thoughts, sir?
For me, like, I think the deal is fine because, again, Vooch is good. I don't want to rehash everything you've already said. You've nailed it. I just wondered, what does this signal exactly? Is this just we have to retain our talent and we don't want to hard cap ourselves with a sign and trade with this group, which would make sense? Or is this some kind of belief in, hey, we were just in the play-in game against the team that made the finals with better help, some retooling on the roster? We may can do this thing. If it's the latter, I have major concerns because I don't think Chicago is at that point and should not be making that move. So, like, my antennas just kind of went up. Like, okay, what does this mean for Chicago? Because I think Vooch is a $20 million player. I don't have many concerns with that. And as I was talking through it early on Twitter, when the deal came out, I was like, well, I think it's a fine contract. And if it ends up being like a partial guarantee in year three or something like that, then it's even better. Like, I think that's movable. And even without that, that kind of dampens it a little bit for me. But I do still think that's a movable deal if they do decide to go the other way, or if they just want to turn Vooch into some other talent moving forward based on what the rest of the roster is. So, like, I do think it's fine. I just still have my concerns about what Chicago is trying to build right now and how close they think they are versus how close they actually are in light of the LaVine contract still going up. DeMar DeRozan's going to be up for a new deal, if not this summer, the next offseason. And I wonder what extension talks look like for DeMar. And that's, I think that really becomes the, I guess, the inflection point for me. It's like, okay, if this turns into DeMar getting a 3 or 4 year extension with Chicago, not that he doesn't deserve it, because he's been very good in Chicago. It's just, okay, I feel like this team kind of has a ceiling. I don't think they should be trying to lock into this all the way. And so I just kind of keep my eye on that front.
It's an interesting point. I'm not surprised. But for me, I think, and I wonder, where was Chicago going to pivot to? Especially right now.
Mm-hmm.
I can't think of a worse time to try and pivot than this specific moment where everyone is leaving the CBA on red.
Well, they just got the CBA like 10 minutes ago. So just on delivered. I don't know.
But for me, I'm thinking like Chicago didn't necessarily intend to build this core, right?
Mm-hmm.
They had Zach LaVine. They got Nikola Vucevic. That opened up the door to get DeMar DeRozan. You have talent. You're trying to see how good this version of your team is. I still don't think they have the answers, even though it's clear the ceiling isn't as high as maybe we thought once it all came together. I think the issue is, where do you pivot to? Where do you go? You know you don't want to go backwards. It's not Washington Wizards-esque, but it's adjacent to where we're here. We need to turn this into something. Let's see how good this is. And if not, let's pivot. I think that's the position from my gut.
I got you. I will just say two things on that front. It's starting to feel less like Wizards adjacent, and it's starting to feel more like Wizards. And okay. I think that's problematic. To be honest about it. And to the point about we need to see how good this team can be, like I think the closest we got to that was the stretch when Lonzo was healthy. And because it doesn't look like he's going to be healthy for a while, like I think he's already been ruled out for next season, I don't know how you tap back into that. And so I don't know if they can get back there.
What other path do you take?
Like me sitting with a podcast mic who does not have to make multi-million/billion-dollar decisions, it is very easy for me to say, get what you can for DeMar. Get what you can for Vooch eventually. Explore what does that like. I would be of the mind of let's take the full step back. And let's build this back. That's what I would do. I also recognize it is very easy for me to say that. But this feels like a team that is capped at its current core. And without some kind of major swing that I don't see right now, that can kind of flip that, that feels like that's where it's going. So maybe I'm just being super negative about it, but that's just kind of where I'm at with Chicago's path.
I hear you, but another part of their path is 31, 22, 22, 27. That's the four seasons of wins they had prior to going 46 and 36.
Not great.
They don't light the bridge, is all I'm saying.
They don't. And that's why I think it's way more likely that they tried to build this from the middle than going the other way. But again, I think it would be more fruitful for them long term for them to go the other way. We'll see how realistic that is moving forward. We have some Kings news that we can pivot to very quickly. So one, the Kings are retaining Harrison Barnes, which is not something that I really had on the bingo card. Not a major surprise, but like a little bit of a huh. Didn't see it. A 3-year, $54 million deal. And I say I didn't see it because it felt like they were linked to all kinds of Fords. Linked to Kyle Kuzma. There were the Draymond Green rumblings. Now, whether you consider that as just a leverage play versus them having significant interest or there being mutual interest, that's your prerogative. But like, it felt like they were going to make a splash at the four and give Keegan more minutes moving forward, more of a role moving forward. And so for it to now turn into Harrison Barnes' back, I didn't see it. But it does make sense. He's still a very good player. He's still someone that can defend multiple forward spots, someone that can knock down shots, someone that can beat closeouts, which is important for the way that Sacramento moves the ball and gets defenses in rotation. So I like it. I think the deal is fair value. I was just a little surprised that it happened. What were your initial takeaways?
My first takeaway was the Kings must not see their person out there this summer. They must not see whoever was going to elevate them via free agency. So if you don't see it, like for me, I thought Kuzma to the Kings made sense. I don't think anyone would have blamed them for taking this year, having that cap space and making a splash.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, you don't want to disrupt what you've built. And Harrison Barnes is very important to what you've built so far.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you mentioned what he brings on both ends of the table. I just think he unlocks so many lineups for them. He's so versatile. He's so steady. That helps their program. And it's really just a salute to Sacramento for having a culture to where, hey, re-signing Harrison Barnes, it makes a ton of sense because you guys have something. That's a big W. But for me, it's just more like, I just don't think they had the value they wanted in free agency. So I think it's, let's try and improve what we've built in a different way. And if we need to, we can pivot, we can trade.
Mm-hmm.
But let's bring Harrison Barnes back. Let's run it back. Let's continue to grow and build this out.
Yeah.
That was my main thought.
Okay, that makes sense. And I also wonder, in light of Domantas Sabonis being up for, I think, a contract renegotiation later this summer, I wonder how much of it is, okay, maybe we want to figure that piece out first before we really attempt to make a big free agency splash. And that combined with, to your point, maybe not seeing the guy that they really want here. I wonder if that also kind of factors into the thing. But either way, solid deal. No, they're happy to have Harrison back. The locker room seems to love him, so makes sense. Also on the Kings front, Hersham Charania of The Athletic. It looks like they are on the verge of acquiring Chris Duarte from the Indiana Pacers for a draft compensation is all we have right now. So as those details come in, like I'll update that on the next pod if necessary. But Chris Duarte in Sacramento, I'll let you go first. Do you like that fit?
Yeah, I like the move for the Kings. I don't think it answers all of the wing questions
it does not.
That folks may have with the Kings, but it's absolutely a nice piece for them to have, and it's a nice addition to their wing room. I really just like the fit. Like his chemistry with Domantas Sabonis is a major plus. I think Caitlin Cooper mentioned no one assisted Duarte more during his rookie season than Sabonis, so I put that in the back of my head. So we know what their two-man game can do. We know how important handoffs and movement is in Sacramento. It's another piece that fits what they're trying to do, which, again, is a salute to Sacramento for having a culture and a style of play where we can identify talent that's going to help us. So I just think it's a good marriage. It's a good fit. What do you think?
No, I'm right there with you. Just to add to that, I was looking at some second spectrum stuff earlier today. A combined 290 pick and roll and handoffs between Chris Duarte and Domantas Sabonis during Duarte's rookie year. So to your point and to Caitlin's point, like a lot of usage between those two, the chemistry is there. And I think to the wing portion, like, no, it does not solve it because it's like, for me, it's looking at the Kings roster. Okay, who is the big wing defender that you really trust? That's not going to be Chris Duarte. But if you look at what some of the perimeter room was off the bench for them, like Kevin Herter felt like the only true movement shooter that they had. In the guard room, because obviously Keegan can move and shoot, but in the guard room, it felt like Kevin Herter was really the only one there. Like, that's not De'Aaron, that's not Davion, that's not really Terrence Davis, et cetera. So, like, having another guy in Chris Duarte that can really slot into that field of lane and transition, flow into some random handoffs, do some back cuts if they front you, that kind of thing, the fit makes sense. Also, we may just see like a big boost for Chris Duarte just being healthier than he was last year. Missed nearly half the season dealing with various injuries, most namely the ankle. So like if he gets back healthy and now he's back in a comfortable position with Domantas Sabonis, the jump shot really bounces back. The movement pops, the improved the pace is going to pop still. I like that. And if the cost is, again, all we have right now is future draft compensation. If that's like a 2024 second or something like that, and now Chris Duarte is averaging 11 points off your bench, shooting 38% from three, I think you take that if you're Sacramento. So it feels like a really calculated move from their point. So I like that for them. We'll see if Duarte is healthy. We'll see what the role looks like, but it seems like a pretty good fit. To the big drama heading into free agency officially starting, I think, what, 6 Eastern. James Harden opted into his near $36 million deal, or what's left of it, with the Philadelphia 76ers, but he has once again requested a trade per various reporting outlets at this point. It looks like James Harden is going to be a Los Angeles Clipper at some point this summer. Would seem to be the betting favorite at the very least. I can't say that I had this one. Like, I'm surprised that it turned to this degree. And then as you catch up on tweets and read different stories about how the relationship fell apart over the last year and a half with James Harden and Philly, this is great podcasting on my part, but like, I don't know what to do with 85% of this.
What you mean?
I just don't, because it's like, you make the move for James Harden to get him in there, and then you fast forward to now, it's Philadelphia never saw James Harden as a long-term option. It's like, why did you trade for him if you didn't feel like this was going to be a long-term connection between him and Joel Embiid? You get the rumblings after the Doc Rivers firing, it's like, well, James and Doc clash, and now here comes Nick Nurse, and no, James just isn't going to be there. There was the Christmas report with James and Houston, and then it's, well, Houston has signaled for months now that they don't really want to do that. Okay. And so now it's, and then you rewind again. James Harden opted out, gave up some money, helped Philadelphia build some, you know, build their roster out. They get the bogus tampering call, which will, again, I'll rant about that some other time. And now the top leverage play is gone. And you look at who has cap space, and it's, there aren't any teams aside from Houston that would want James Harden. It just felt like a weird play. It just all feels kind of wonky as you like work your way back to how it started to where it is now.
No, to put it in simpler terms, the math is not mathing for me. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure. Like, I see the story of, hey, James Harden was upset that the Sixers didn't talk to him. And the Sixers went ghost and they didn't think a long-term extension. And I'm not into all that. For me, it probably just feels like, hey, do we want to give that amount of money for that many years?
Mm-hmm.
It was crossroads time. That move was made to try and elevate Philadelphia's window. I think it did what it was supposed to. They just didn't get the payoff. And so do you want to do 3-4 more years of that? I think that was the question Philly asked themselves to a degree. Now, if you're James Harden, you can understandably be like, hey, I'm pretty good at basketball.
Just average 21-11, you know?
Yeah. So, but I think it's time. I was shocked as soon as it was just, hey, he's opting in and it's a trade. Like, a trade is happening. The Clippers destination makes a lot of sense, especially with the assumed price, which I don't know where you're at, but for me, it's low. I'm assuming this is going to match and that's going to be that with some picks. And so if you're the Clippers and you're able to get James Harden, that's a heavy dose of playmaking.
They need it.
And everyone's talking about, hey, who's the point guard? James Harden is a playmaker. He's going to have more wiggle room to lean on that portion more than the, hey, you have to score part. That's the fun part for me. Mm-hmm. Think about that context to where he can now go out and make plays without necessarily having to score. But the switching concerns me. Like, if we're concerned with Paul George and Kawhi because they're switches, do you have the bigs for James Harden to play with? Our team's going to just switch that anyways.
Mm-hmm.
And then where are you at?
Is this a another rim pressure question for the Los Angeles Clippers?
Oh, God.
I'm just asking. It feels like we keep doing the thing. But no, because if the price is going to be some combination of like Norman Powell, Marcus Morris, Robert Covington, whatever the case may be, or if it builds out to a three-team deal, like we'll see. I'm with you that it is going to be relatively low because James Harden is very good. I think you brought up a really good point about the switches. Where I was going to go was to your point about James Harden being able to lean into the playmaking and not needing to score. In light of Kawhi is going to play 45 to 55 games, it feels like you could pencil that in, unless I just end up taking an L on that. Paul George has missed time throughout his 10 years as a Clipper. How often will James Harden just get to lean into, I am a playmaker, I set these dudes up and score opportunistically? I don't know, because the health of the co-stars that he's joining has been up in the air throughout their Clippers tenure. And so does this become another instance of, this feels great, I don't have to carry this burden, I can turn up when necessary, which was kind of the thesis of the Brooklyn thing for James Harden. And we saw what it looked like at the high end. And we also saw him looking around like, okay, Kyrie ain't here for waves arms wildly. KD been in and out. I got a 35 usage again. This is not what I signed up for. Does he go to the Clippers saying, cool, I got PG on my left, Kawhi on my right. We'll see what happens with Russ. We got people that can score. I can just kind of chill and then turn up when necessary. Ah, Kawhi's doing maintenance. Oh no, PG has twisted an ankle. I have 35 usage again. And they're switching everything that I do. Because the one roller we have right now is Zubats. This isn't what I signed up for. Are we back here in a year and a half? Or in like 8 months? Like, I hope not, but it doesn't feel slam dunkish in that regard. I do think the high end potential of this is championship, frankly. But there are enough questions, and once you factor in how James has left Brooklyn now, how James may be on the verge of leaving Philly, it's like, there's enough here to where you can look at it and say, this might not work either. And if it doesn't, then what do you do?
But is there a team that's more desperate than the Clippers to be great?
I don't think so. Like, the bet makes sense. And again, the on paper fit feels like a really good one. Like, sans the switching issue, which I think is valid. But like, even with that, you zoom out, like, it's still James Harden can push things in transition. James Harden can still isolate. We saw some of the burst return as a driver. We saw what he did as a mid-range scorer. We know he gets to the step back whenever he wants to. So like, even when you factor in the concerns, it still feels like a really good basketball fit. It's just that there's enough on the other side where, like, I keep an eye on it. But to your point, yeah, like, the Clippers definitely want to win. Like, they mortgage just about everything to bring PG and Kawhi in at the same time. And they have one conference finals appearance to show for it right now. Now, obviously, a lot of circumstances factor into that. But they have one to show for it. And the new arena comes in, what, 2 years from now at this point? They want to win before going, or have a winner as they head into that place. It kind of has to work. And this is also a big summer for the Clippers, just because I think Kawhi and Paul George are both extension eligible this offseason. What do you do? This is just fascinating to me. I guess I'll toss this one to you. It does feel like James Harden is a Clipper at some point this summer. If something breaks down between the Sixers and the Clippers, are there any other fits that you like for him?
It's a good question, guys. The Knicks? Question mark?
I don't like that. Like, I think the Knicks could, if the Knicks wanted this done, they could just have this done already. Because they have the pieces, they have the salary, they have the picks to do it. I just don't love a Jalen Brunson, James Harden backcourt in a playoff setting.
That's fair.
And I don't know if the rest of the personnel, obviously they can make moves after this trade if they were to do it, but like, they don't feel like a switchable enough group to really make that work with James. And so I struggle with that fit.
I got a question for you.
Okay.
Is James Harden Miami Heat's plan C?
He doesn't appear to be. Like, my hot take that I've been kind of floating out for like the last month and a half is like, if he becomes available, Miami should take the shot, because I don't think it would cost them that much. And like, he, that feels like a situation where he doesn't have to carry the load. Or at the very least, it would be like regular season adjacent, because we know what Jimmy Butler can do in the postseason setting. We've saw the growth from Bam Adebayo. They have the defensive infrastructure to build that out. Like, I would like that. I would like Miami to take the gamble. Obviously, they are waiting on whatever Damian Lillard does. And so I don't think they're going to be in. And I know Heat Twitter at large would just yell about the culture fit, which that's fair. I'm not going to completely dismiss that. But he feels like the kind of guard that can really unlock Bam and pick and roll. And I think that's important. That would probably be top of the list for me if he's not a Clipper. Because I think if Philly wants to maintain flexibility, Miami can just get there in salary with like Kyle Lowry. Like maybe it's Lowry, Jovic, and a future first. And then another protected pick if necessary. And they do that. And then they can move Tyler Hero elsewhere if they want to do that. Or if Philly just wants something more long term, like they can offer the Hero contract, even if Philly plans to move that elsewhere. Like it feels workable if they want to have interest. No reporting here. I don't think Miami's going to have interest in James Harden. So like this is very much just me spitballing, but I would like for them to get in the race on that. I guess beyond that, how would you feel about Boston?
I don't like it.
Okay.
I don't like it. Okay. Not that it wouldn't work. Not that James couldn't do well in Boston. Just the idea of Boston as a contender with the pieces they would also have to give up to get James Harden. I don't love the idea of that group having no depth and losing all their versatility.
I guess I wonder what they would have to give up in order to make that work. I would imagine they would try to attach some stuff to Brogdon. It's like the primary salary there. Like you in 2K and be like, hey, James Harden for Jaylen Brown. Boston's not doing that for multiple reasons. And ultimately, you would just want to build a big three if you're trying to get James Harden in the building, if you're Boston. So like that's off the table. I hear the depth point. I just wonder if James brings enough, so much playmaking that it becomes worth it. Because it kind of feels like that half-court continuity is like the biggest issue for Boston's offense right now. And just the general passing talent on the group, especially in light of Marcus Smart now being moved. Like, I wonder if that would be enough of a gamble for them to consider.
I just, considering you're going to have to give up Brogdon and a big, I don't love it. Like, which I don't. Don't lose Marcus Smart and Al or Rob Will in the same summer. To me, at least.
No, that's fair. That's fair. Just wanted to get your thoughts on that. Other free agency slash option news that we've gotten ahead of, again, free agency starting, I guess, what, 5 hours at this point? Pelicans declining a team option on Herb Jones, making him a restricted free agent. I would imagine that means an extension is going to be announced at like 6.02 p.m. Eastern. So don't really smoke there, but that was just interesting. Like, it's similar to the, obviously Herb Jones is not Jokic, but it's similar to the Jokic decision that Denver made before he got his first big contract. Because he was a second-round talent. He had, I think it was like a three-year deal that he got signed on. So they had to decline that just to get him in earlier, because otherwise, if you play out that last year at little money, he becomes unrestricted from there. And Denver obviously wouldn't want that for Jokic for obvious reasons. And New Orleans probably felt the same way. So similar dynamic there. Jordan Clarkson and Andre Drummond both opting into their deals with Utah and Chicago, respectively. The Andre Drummond was interesting since we heard the smoke about Dallas and that being a potential destination. And it's like, nah, I'm cool here in Chicago. So that's neat. On the Laker front, they were not going to guarantee the 10 plus million of Mo Bamba's deal. Waived him. He may be back. We'll see. Declined the team option on Malik Beasley, who found himself out of the rotation by the time the playoffs rolled around. He may be back. Later in free agency, we shall see. But that's going to be interesting to monitor what happens with both of them if they aren't Lakers by the end of the summer. And Bruce Brown, just, hey, man, good season for you. Good postseason run for you. Everybody wants you. You got the mid-level exception. Do you have cap space? Are you a team that is good but needs a little bit more defensive juice? Bruce Brown may be for you. Hat tip to Bruce Brown. He has earned this. And so we'll see if he ends up doing the like the 1+1 thing for Denver so he can really get paid next offseason, or if he just takes the big money somewhere. Lakers have been linked. A bunch of teams have been linked, Bruce Brown. But I love that for him. Your Bruce Brown thoughts. I think you are the one to add this to the doc.
Oh, no. Just happy for Bruce Brown. He's leaving with something. No matter what it is, he's leaving there with something.
As he should.
You just think about his growth as a basketball player, his journey, going from a guard to, hey, you're not a guard, to, okay, I can get minutes as a big, I can roll, and also being a guard again. It's nice to see him actually be able to enjoy this process. And hey, all you teams that didn't want me or didn't see the vision or didn't think I was this.
Now I'm hot, y'all all. No, go ahead.
Yeah, what's up? What's up? Let's have a chat. Worst case scenario, I go back to Denver. Best case scenario, y'all really want me. So I'm intrigued by that portion with Bruce Brown's free agency. But he has earned the right to enjoy every single second of it.
That he has. That he has. We can now shift to the W portion of the program. We'll go with the not fun news first, and then we'll get into the fun stuff. Shakira Austin talked about it a little bit on the last episode because she suffered a hip injury, just didn't know what the severity of that was. She's out at least 3 weeks, which stinks. Averaging 11-8, still stellar defensively, some real offensive growth shown from Shakira Austin for the Washington Mystics. So we just hope that she recovers and comes back soon. That does mean Tiana Hawkins is going to get more minutes in the front court. Her and Elena Deladon, they've kind of blitzed teams in the games that they played together or when they're on the floor together. Plus 25 and 105 minutes so far for that front court pairing. A little spacier. So we'll see what that does for the Washington Mystics offense while Shakira is out. We'll keep an eye on it. The Dallas Wings had a lot of roster movement this week. They brought Odyssey Sims back. They had to waive Jasmine Dickey and Ashley Jones to make that happen. They also had to waive Kalani Brown temporarily because of the hardship contract. Quickly brought her back. Said, absolutely not. We are not allowing any other team to think about it, which makes sense because Kalani Brown has been very good for Dallas. And on the Storm front, Gabby Williams appears to be on her way back via reporting from the Next. She will be back in Seattle. I like that. They need her blend of defense and playmaking and rim pressure. And just not that she's an older vet, but like some form of veteran presence for a really young team. I'm excited to watch Gabby Williams play basketball on the W again. It felt up in the air, especially with her comments after the season and her commenting on the prioritization rule that kicked in this offseason. So it's cool that she's been able to find her or will find her way back this season. So that's fun. I guess we can transition from there, unless you have Gabby Williams or Odyssey Sims or Shakira Austin thoughts. We are good to go. Very cool. The Las Vegas Aces played the New York Liberty last night. And highly anticipated. Shout out to those of you with Amazon Prime subscriptions or friends with Amazon Prime subscriptions that got to witness one of the most highly anticipated games of the season last night. The Aces with a 98-81 victory over the Liberty. A balanced effort, a game that completely took off in the third quarter in particular when the Aces outscored the Liberty 27-14. A lot of turnovers for the Liberty, a lot of early offense / transition offense from the Aces. I was very impressed with the game that the Aces were able to put together. Very balanced effort offensively. Defensively, they've been a good defense all year long. I've had my quibbles about certain stuff or certain aspects of their defense. But this felt like the first game against an elite opponent to where they hit all the buttons defensively. Where they toggled between the switching and the scram switches, the switch and doubles, big at the level, big and drop. They've been trying to press all those buttons during games this year. Some games have been good, some have been kind of eh. It felt like they were locked in from the jump against the Liberty defensively. Also fun just to watch Candace Parker operate and continue to showcase her comfort with the Aces. Very cold start to the season for her offensively. I always felt like the defense was pretty good, but cold start offensively. She is finding her rhythm as someone that can grab a board, push it up, and initiate offense, blowing the handoffs early, can be a post-up option, can be an entry passer for the Aces post-up, which I feel like has been a very underrated part of the Aces offense being really good. Like they're just getting to it. It feels like deeper catches on post-ups. Their efficiency on post-ups, they were 11th last year. They are top three this year. Candace is a big part of that. But watching her just flow into stuff. 8 points in that second quarter, I want to say. Pair of threes, got an interior bucket as well. Candace just feels really comfortable. And boy, did the Aces have fun against the Liberty's guards. And that would represent my three primary takeaways from that game. Steve, I will concede the floor to you. I have more commentary, but I feel like I talked a lot there. It's a big win for the Aces.
Well deserved. I understand the need for a victory lap today, Nikias. It's okay. It was a big time showdown. Very fun to watch. Very highly anticipated. As you stated, the Liberty have been working. They've been getting better. The wins have come along with it. The record is right there. But they're not there yet. They're not where the Aces are. And that's the interesting part, because we have the super teams who don't want to be called super teams and everyone else behind the super team saying, hey, super team, you're not that good. The Aces reminded folks, hey, we were a very, very good team that also got better. And it's the totality of the Aces that stood out to me. Like, the Liberty were looking for a test. The Aces were there to deliver a message. Like, what do you do with that starting unit on both ends of the floor? They played at such a high level. All five starters were in double figures. Nikias, all of them scored 14 or more. All of them shot 50% or better. It wasn't just like a singular dominant game. It was a whole bunch of things coming at you. Starters, 31 made field goals, 28 assists. They were locked.
Ooh, wait. I was just going to quickly add, it also felt like all of the starters had a stretch. And that was the fun part of, like, the balance. Because, like, Kelsey Plum got things started. She finished with 18-8, but she had 13-3 in the first quarter. Second quarter comes. Here are some very timely Candace Parker buckets. Third quarter comes. Jackie Young and Asia Wilson with 8 points apiece. And in the middle of all that, here's a no-look from Chelsea Gray. Here's an early slip pass from Chelsea Gray. Here's, I think you clipped it, early first quarter. Here's Chelsea Gray just bullying Sabrina Ionescu. I'm like, okay, well, this is the matchup that I'm getting. But let me just go ahead and let you know this isn't going to work very early. And she just picked her spots. It was fun to watch them just kind of flow like that. And it felt like, in terms of the half court connectivity, here's our action, didn't work or didn't give us the advantage we wanted. We're going to another one. Then we're going into another one. And then we'll ISO from there if necessary. It felt like one of the rare times, I won't say the first time, but it felt like one of the rare times where that part was just clicking. Even if the shots didn't fall, they knew what they wanted to get to in the half court. And that was a lot of fun.
You're right, but you know what's scary?
What's up?
They could even have been better. Like, the offense could have been smoother. The execution could have improved. The defense could have eliminated some of those breakdowns. That's where it gets really scary with the Aces. And like you mentioned, Candace Parker, she had the look in her eye right away. 3 for 4 from three, which stands out to me because, not because it's Candace Parker. We know her talent level. She had made a total of 5 made threes in the month of June, before she made 3 in one game against the Liberty. I just want that on the record. You mentioned the Aces guards attacking, but there's not enough clips that will explain the imbalance between the box score and what Kelsey Plum, Jackie Young, and Chelsea Gray were attempting to do at all times to a lot of the Liberty's matchups. I thought it was an important reminder of the Liberty also need their defense. But that's a big part of their success. And if it goes left, it goes left. I think this is the second time they've given up 90 or more. But without those stops, they can't get out in transition. They can't get easy baskets. And the Aces did the work in the half court. I was really into the Liberty's attempt to match up. Courtney Vandersloot, you have Kelsey Plum. Benaja Laney, you have Jackie Young. Sabrina, you have Chelsea Gray.
Record scratch.
And you mentioned it. You mentioned it in the watch party. It was like, hey, Chelsea's going to do what she's going to do. Maybe that's the theory behind it. The problem was 5-6 seconds left on the clock, 10 seconds left on the clock. It's Sabrina guarding Chelsea one-on-one. Or it's Sabrina having to navigate pick and roll. And then they just started saying, hey, whoever she's matched up against, just go to work.
Oh, that was such a, I don't want to say a funny element because that sounds like mean-hearted, but like literally whoever they put Sabrina on, they ran her through something. Oh, you got Chelsea, bully ISO or pick and roll. Let's put her on Kelsey. Kelsey wanted that matchup. I will leave it there. Let's put her on Jackie Young. Hey, let's run this slice into the post. And so she either have to navigate this cross screen or she's going to switch. And now she's on Asia. It's just like, dang, dog, where do you put her?
Nah, they started off on a rude point and never left. I think Chelsea Gray had the post up and one, and then Jackie Young had it in transition. Was like, oh, you're guarding me. Bop, 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 pull up. And then Kelsey, on site, she was definitely shooting that the first time she saw that matchup. So that's where it gets tough. And I think for me, I kind of want to go Aces defense first.
Okay.
Or should we go Liberty offense? What do you think?
You can go Aces. Well, yeah, you go Aces defense.
We'll just kind of mash it up. I thought the Aces being able to hit the multiple coverages that they did in that game was just so key. And you mentioned a lot of them. So, again, I don't want to rehash your work, but the activity against Stewie. Like, hey, A, we have the personnel to defend you. We're also going to be active and help. Your movement's going to become a switch. Pick and roll might also be a switch. And then we'll do switch and double. It's fine. That was a huge thing they took off the table. And then I thought they never really let Sabrina get comfortable. They never let her get in rhythm. She saw tired. Different coverages. She's tired, but also she saw drop. She saw a late switch. She saw just a straight up switch. She saw a trap if you tried to mix matchups up. So that took another thing off the table. And that was the big thing for me. The Aces just quietly, slowly taking things off the menu for the Liberty. Because that's been one of my biggest positives for New York all season long. You've added this talent, but you've worked to build a base of movement around that talent. The Aces were mixing in unders and switches and physical against cuts. They took that off the board. Again, you throw in, hey, we don't want to let Jonquel and Stewie go to work, but we do have the personnel to feel like we can guard them. Mm-hmm. That comes off the board. Drive and kick, not really there. We're keeping you in front, and if you do get by, there's help. So that's off the table. Oh, Stewie running around, like I mentioned, switches, that's off table. And you see, piece by piece, the Liberty didn't have a thing to fall back on. They didn't have the pressure points. And that's where, hey, we don't necessarily have that piece of the winning aspect down. Because there were times where Stewie would have a matchup against Jackie Young or Kelsey Plum, and it was like, throw it in. And then they wouldn't throw it in. And it's like, okay. Guess we'll bookmark that.
That's that felt like a consistent theme as we were like talking about it during the watch party at the very least. It's like just random possessions. Like, ooh, I like the set that New York ran. They messed with Ace's willingness to switch. They got a match up here. They need to hunt it or they need to get to it a little bit quicker. Fine. But it just felt like the Aces also just adjust on the next possession. Like, oh, okay, they may be trying to get to this. Let's be a little bit more physical or let's reconfigure the matchups here or let's get aggressive here. And it was just a lot of fun. And also, to your Stewie point, as someone that's just, you know, been following the Aces throughout this entire run, like, it's been fun to watch them build upon the defense that they played in Stewie in last year's playoffs, where it felt like it became a lot more switching. And we saw some switch and doubles mixed in, but it wasn't a ton of them. I still have that random, I want to say third or fourth quarter stretch, where Jackie Young just got the Stewie assignment, and it was just like, Foul drawn. You know, Jackie is like, well, she's trying. This is kind of tough. I feel bad for Jackie. So, like, to juxtapose that to, all right, yeah, we're going to switch and double. We're going to scram out of that. We're going to pre-rotate while the scram is happening. And, okay, we're not going to switch this time. We're just going to peel in the help early. It feels like there is no way to stop Breonna Stewart. So that is not the argument I'm making. Don't put those words in my mouth. It does feel like the Aces are like building a base on, okay, we at least know what we want to do against Stewie. It may not matter because she's the best player in the W, but we have a game plan against Breonna Stewart and we know how we want to mix in our looks against Breonna Stewart. And like, not a lot of teams can say that beyond Stewie just being so much better than a lot of players, that it may not matter what you do. But it's been fun to watch them build that base over the last year and a half. Like, this is how we want to guard her. And to this point of the season with the Liberty, you mentioned like they're building the movement around her. It has still felt like a good bit of, hey, Stewie, can you save us real quick? Because like the thing that we're trying to do, it isn't working right now. We need you to get that. And so when you get a game like last night where, all right, the Aces are taking away a lot of the movement stuff. Now it's time to press the Stewie button. And now the Aces also have this game plan against Stewie. And I was like, okay, now what? Now what are we getting into? And, like, they just could not find things consistently against this Aces defense. There are still things to poke at. And I know they'll look at that film. But it was just such a really good job from the Aces defense in this game.
No, it was great. The Liberty had flashes. There was some time when the movement and the talent combined, but the Aces really worked their tails off. Just great activity to try and take things off the board. Like even just the little thing, like a late switch and everyone rotating at Stewie as she popped. I was like, oh, this is different. Y'all are ready to send a message here.
Hashtag not you.
And it's just like, you start with that lineup and then, hey, here comes Stokes and Clark. Try and score against this. It's like, what?
The fronts from Alicia Clark. Oh, goodness. Yeah, the fronting from Alicia Clark against Breanna Stewart when they're trying to post her up in that second quarter, I want to say. So fun. Like, one, there was just a possession. They were, like, talking before a sideline play. They're just laughing. And then it was immediately Breanna Stewart running off a screen and drawing a foul as Alicia Clark tried to chase. I'm like, huh, that's some fun veteran stuff. But no, like, Alicia Clark really put in work. And Kia Stokes, I can't say enough about the work she's been doing defensively all year long. And, like, honestly, if she was playing 28 minutes a game, like, she's just on an all defense team. I don't think she's going to get there. She's not going to play enough. But she's been that good on a possession-by-possession basis. They just have so many things they can throw at you. And this is what the Aces have been trying to build through all season. This is the challenge that Becky Hammon issued to her team. Like, we want to be an elite defense. And last night, Sean was like, nah, we can tap this button against the highest offensive talent in the league. And that is fun. That is impressive. That's also scary because, to your point, there were some miscues, particularly in that first half. Or if you think about how they ended the second quarter, where it looked like they were running away, and then here's this, I think, 8-2 run from the Liberty to make it a single-digit game. It's like, okay, they still have these lapses. There are still things they can poke at. As they continue to gain that comfort, it gets tough. And we still have not seen Raquana Williams for the Aces this year yet. So, like, there's more bench depth to be added. Get well soon, Raquana. We'll see when she makes her debut. But, yeah, what a game. I have to ask you a question before we move off of this game in particular.
What's up?
Because we've talked about Sabrina and the defense. But, like, how concerned are you about the defensive front court? I mean, defensive backcourt?
Overall, not too much. I don't like it in the Aces matchup. For certain. Let's be sure there. But I don't know. I think there's a trend that they need to address as far as guards having comfort, looking to attack and turn the corner. They need to adjust to that before that becomes the book. Because you go back to the comfort level that the Washington Mystics guards had.
Yeah, that's what I'm
about. In particular, Natasha Cloud looked like she wanted to drive every single time. So for me, if I'm the Liberty, it's do enough to try and take that part off the table. But I also think the Aces just having those three that can all do it makes it really tough. Because normally you can put Laney on player X, CVS on player Y, Sabrina on player Z. You have two great defensive bigs. We have enough in the ecosystem to make it tough.
Mm-hmm.
In the Aces matchup,
no,
they really didn't. And the Aces guards over and over and over again look to attack. And then when they even went to wrinkles, dribble handoffs, Jackie Young cutting back door. Dribble handoff. You deny it. Now it's just Candace Parker flowing off Asia Wilson, take a pull-up three. Hey, here's empty corner pick and roll featuring anyone.
Yeah.
And so even there were two, I think the bigger problem was less that the Liberty guard struggled and more how they did, to where you could have 15, 20 seconds of really good defense immediately undone by a catch and drive. And that's what the Liberty can't afford.
Yeah. Like, I just don't know. And, like, we've talked about this throughout the year, either on the pod or during watch parties. It's like, okay, what are these closing lineups going to look like because of the defense? And, like, how did you strike that balance if you're Sandy Brundello? It's like, we've seen games where Sabrina hasn't closed. We've seen games where Jonquil hasn't closed. And we know what kind of interior presence that Jonquil can have on the defensive end. And it's just like, okay, how do you have enough of a defensive base in these important games or important moments while also maintaining the, okay, we can get to movement offensively, we can get to Stewie offensively, we can get to Courtney Vanderstu pick and roll offensively, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. If we reach a point, and it's June 30th, so like the point shouldn't be reached right now, but if we ever reach a point where it's like, okay, we think the Vandersloot Ionescu backcourt defensively is not up to snuff. Whether that's just because of pure size and strength, and you really saw that showcased in the Washington matchup. If it's because of screen navigation and stuff, and just the general, we got talent all over the floor, like the Aces. It gets tough. It's a positive that the Liberty have a level of line of versatility they can get to. And it's nice to have those options. I become a little bit concerned if, no, we have to tap into the versatility versus it being an additive, if that makes sense.
No, it makes sense. But I think the other thing is they have lineup versatility against everyone but the Aces. Because if you want to put Thornton and Banajelani out there together, more times than not, you're going to be smaller. You're going to have a big out there. Mm-hmm. Just because of your guards and the playmaking that you have, it's hard to bench two of three of Sabrina, Marine, and Courtney Vandersloot. And I think that's what stood out to me in the Aces game. It was like, okay, here's Laney, here's Thornton. Oh, wait, one of them is engaged because they have to guard a big. So you were kind of in the same scramble scenario matchup-wise. So that's where I'm like, they need to fix that part of it.
Mm-hmm. And I guess zooming out big picture, that's also part of my struggle in evaluating like games or matchups like this. Because it's like, yeah, like this issue only exists against the Aces. I think I'm with you on that. However, the Aces are the reigning champions and you put this team together because you want to win a title. And so if your best title hope is, man, we hope Connecticut or Washington can get the Aces in the mud and beat them in the second round. It's not impossible, obviously. But, like, that doesn't seem ideal.
Well, I think the idea would be we score more.
Yeah.
And that gives our defense a little bit better of a chance. Mm-hmm. Or we get some easier baskets. But, I mean, that's a good point. But, again, that's why this was a message that was delivered. Oh, we got some work to do to get to where we really want to be. And to get the answers to beat a team like this, that's an important growing mark for the Liberty.
Important mark indeed, and once again, an impressive win for the Las Vegas Aces, up to 14-1 this season right now. Best net rating in the league, best offense in the league, top three defense, closing in on the 20-1 marks for most wins in a season before accumulating your second loss in the season. The Aces are humming. It's just kind of tough for the league right now. Speaking of the league, we can zoom out for a bit. All-Star reserves are being announced pregame on Saturday's slate of games. So by Monday or Tuesday, whenever the next pod is, we'll be reacting to those. But, Steve, let's talk through some All-Star reserves. I think it is 3 guards, 5 front court players, 4 wild cards. If you got to fill out a ballot for this, the coaches get to decide in real life. But if you got to fill out a ballot for your All-Star reserves this year, who would you have?
Well, my guard room, it is Kelsey Plum, Alisha Gray, Kalia Copper.
Okay.
Front court, it is Alyssa Thomas, Elena Deladon, Nafisa Collier, Cheyenne Parker, Dawana Bonner.
Okay.
My wild cards is where I really started to have some fun, and this is where I wish a couple people had just thrown a few more baskets in there to make this a little easier, but it's okay. I have Kelsey Mitchell.
Okay.
I have Sabrina Ionescu.
Okay.
I have Courtney Vandersloot.
Mm-hmm.
I have Ezzy Magbegor.
Okay.
Those are my all-stars. I probably would have had Bree Jones and Shakira Austin if they were healthy. Mm-hmm. But that's what I got so far.
I got you. Bree Jones was a painful but an easy elimination for me just because she's done for the year. So I'm not going to field a ballot there. Shakira Austin was an interesting person to debate, but also she's about to miss another 2-3 weeks. So that just becomes rough. I'm with you. I also had a time with the wild card slots. Like heading into this exercise, I was like, oh man, I'm just going to struggle with all of this. And then I went through my guards, went through my front court players. I'm like, oh, okay, this is actually pretty straightforward. I hit them for wild card spots. I was like, what is this? Because there are so many players that are just like really, really, really good, but they've had weird starts to the season. And because the All-Star voting and stuff is so early, it's just like, well, I can only go on what we've seen so far and not who I know you are and what you can do. It just gets kind of tough.
Oh, this man's ballot is wild. This man's ballot is wild. There ain't no way he gave that much bail. Free ballot.
Hey, no.
What you got?
Come on. All right. So for my all-star reserve guards, I also have Kelsey Plum, which I'll quickly note, slow start to the season shooting-wise is probably why she wasn't a star to begin with, but draining over 44% of her threes on high volume over her last six games, she seems to be firmly back. Kelsey Mitchell was a guard for me, and naturally, Alicia Gray was a guard for me. She was a starter on my fake ballot, so she's obviously going to make the squad. Career highs across the board for Alicia Gray. The defense has still been good, and it's not her fault that the Dream have not been up to snuff this year. Cool. Front court, I do not have to waste a bunch of time on Alyssa Thomas. I'm not going to do that rant again. She's in there. Nafisa Collier, she's also in there. Elena Deladon, quietly averaging a career high in assists. Converted 51% of her twos, 39% of her threes. Elena Deladon is in there. Ezzy Matt-Bagore is in there.
Mm.
Third in blocks, career high in three-point shooting, improving driver. She's been really good, really fun. Dawana Bonner is also in there. Slow start to the season for her shooting the basketball. 48, 41, 85 shooting splits in June, averaging nearly 19 points a game. The defense has been good. She's had to slide down a position in light of the Bree Jones injury. She's still bringing it. Dawana Bonner's been good. Front court reserve. Cool. The wild cards, though. Courtney Vandersloot was my easiest selection in the wild card group.
Okay.
And that's with the, I guess the primary issue I had with reserve is like everyone has some kind of ick. And so it's trying to balance how much of, like, what, like, how much it bothers you.
Wow.
And it's just like, okay, like, Courtney Vandersloot's in, like, timely buckets, the organizing force for that Liberty squad, leading the W in assists, averaging nearly a steal and a half a game, has not shot the ball well this year. It's like, well, okay, that's your ding, but you're in. I have Natasha Howard. Getting buckets, she's been important to what the Wings are trying to do defensively. One of nine players in the league averaging at least a steal in the block this year. She's had to play more five than anticipated with Tierra McCowan being out, then bringing in Kalani Brown and not having Kalani Brown, etc. But the efficiency does not make me feel good. But she's in. Cheyenne Parker, a wild card for me. 16-7, career high usage, 57 true shooting percentage. That's up. Usage up 5 points. She's been a very important factor on the offensive glass for a Dream offense that has been odd, to say the least. And so in light of that, her creating extra possessions for this Dream team in the half court has been very valuable. Defense hasn't been as good as it was last year, but it's still been fine. She's in. Haven't loved the turnovers. Have not loved the slipping in defense. Those are things I had to consider. She's in. Last wild card spot for me was Jordan Canada. Career high in points, career high in rebounds, career high in assists, top five in steals. She is firm. She would firmly be on my all defense first team if voting ended today. She hasn't shot the ball well from deep. That's been very important with her and rim pressure. She's having one heck of a season. Do I feel great? Not really. Because I could argue for Kalia Copper relatively easily. Defense still good, very valuable rim pressure. The context around her, not her fault because of injuries and just the general roster flux. There isn't the same level of connected playmaking as the team had last year, so that's been an adjustment. But the finishing has not been great. The pull-up shooting has not been great. Catch and shoots have been monstrous. She's shooting a career high from three, I think, or close to a career high in three. Strong case. I couldn't get there. But Nigel Laney, someone else that I considered very strongly. She's been that connective force for the Liberty. She's been one of the best perimeter defenders in basketball. Cole starts the season shooting very well over the last five, six games. Couldn't quite get there. Ryan Howard inside the arc efficiency held me back, but she's still been good. Sabrina Ionescu has not been able to finish shots inside the arc this year. She's having her best shooting season, and we know what she can do as a playmaker. The defense also has been great. There are so many good players where I'm just like, man, if you were playing up to your usual level, this would just not be a discussion. But again, it's trying to balance out what the icks are and going with who I feel most comfortable with. Sloot, Howard, Cheyenne, Jordan are my wild cards right now.
Kalia Copper, not an all-star. Sabrina Ionescu, not an all-star.
Can't get there right now. Very clearly all-star talents. They were all-stars last season. Sabrina was an all-W player last season. would not surprise me if she gets on a run the second half of the year and she's an all-W player by the end of the year. I can only go by what I've seen so far this year. Don't have them in. You are free to poke at my player slash arguments if you would like.
What is the difference between Sabrina and Jordan Canna, besides defense?
The defense is the big part. The defense and the defense being at a level to where Sabrina has not been a consistent closer for her team is a bit problematic for me. Jordan hasn't had that.
Okay.
That's what I had.
Okay. All right. Yeah. What's next?
Yeah, that's... Not the what's next. We oh, man. I do have one mailbag question I wanted to get to that is free agent adjacent. And this one is going to come from Daniel. Again, head of free agency, felt appropriate. He says, hello, Steve, Nikai's and Steve. What did Matisse Thybulle's 22 games in Portland do for his stock heading into restricted free agency this summer? It's not the biggest sample size, but 38.8% from three on 3.9 attempts per game was a huge step up from the 32.5% on 2.1 per game in Philly. What are some teams you'd be interested in seeing him play for next season?
The interesting part with Matisse Thybulle is I think he did what he was supposed to do. The defense is still here at a certain level. Mm-hmm. I'm knocking down shots. I'm willing to take them and make them. Mm-hmm. That's the hurdle he has to clear. The issue for Matisse in this era for me is, okay, where does he go? Because he's heavily a fit and opportunity type of player. Mm-hmm. Like, wherever he goes, I want him to go somewhere that understands, A, what he does, and B, who he is, and allows him to be that, as opposed to, the defense is this, and you're not making shots, so just come sit next to me. Like, I don't want that for him anymore.
Mm-hmm.
I would honestly like to see him back in Portland. Mm-hmm. I think that would be fun. I'm trying to think. Like, would Indiana make sense? Like, would Washington make sense? I'm not sure. Do you have any potential destinations?
Or? Get out of my head. My top of the list, if it isn't, top of the list, if it wasn't going to be going back to Portland, it was going to be Indiana, because they just need to invest in perimeter defense at a certain point. So, like, I would have liked that fit, especially once you factor in the shooting and just the general tempo that they play with. Like, I think that helps with, because in Philadelphia, it's very rigid. We bring the ball up, we flow with Joel or James Harden and Joel. You got to stay in the corner or the dunker spot. And it gave teams time to load up, help, and time to gap up him and all the good stuff. It's different in Portland. There was just more spacing, more tempo. That was helpful. So I think he has to land in an organization like that. I think Indiana could be a fit. Sacramento would make some sense, honestly. Like, they started the year with KZ. They gave Kessler Edwards a chance for the second half of the year. Like, obviously, they can afford to take those kind of bets on guys we don't know if they can shoot. Or that won't be defended as shooters in Matisse's case. Because that is a smaller sample, but it is a solid sample in terms of efficiency. And also just the volume uptick is the important part for me. Because part of the issue in Philly was not only were you not knocking down the shots enough, you're only taking two of them from the perimeter. And so, like, it really became crippling. So if you do have a hot run like this in Portland where the volume's more moderately high and you're knocking down the shots, like, it hasn't been enough to shift what the game plan is. But, like, those are still points being added to the board. And if you're playing on a team that plays faster, that's more possessions, you have more chance to add those points to the board. So those would probably be my two. If there was another wild card.
Dallas?
I don't like Dallas for, like, the tempo question, for the tempo issue. Like, I think that would be a situation where, like, he'd probably be coming off the bench anyway. But, like, that would be a situation he would kind of have to be tethered to, like, the Kyrie minutes. Because Kyrie's going to... Assuming Kyrie's back, we'll see what happens there. But assuming Kyrie's back, I think he kind of have to be tethered to the Kyrie minutes, just because Kyrie's going to be more willing to push tempo, push pace than Luka is. But I guess you can talk me into it in that regard.
You don't see Matisse as a screener for Luka? The defense that he brings to the table? You forget what Matisse did as a screener in Philadelphia?
No, again, you can talk me into it. I guess I wouldn't put Dallas as high up as Indy or Sacramento. But like, I think, you know, as you talk through it, like that's a more feasible fit than I gave credit for.
What about Atlanta?
I guess it would depend on how they really want to construct this roster. Like, if they're trending smaller and spacier, then maybe there's more room for them. I have to simmer on down a little bit. If Brooklyn didn't have 12 wings, /forwards, like, that'd be kind of interesting. I think that probably does it for Derrick Jones Jr. declined his player option, so he's a free agent. Chicago?
Hey, I mean, he fits into what they were trying to add defensively.
Yeah. Hey, go be Javonte. Like, I don't know if that's, I don't know if he has enough of that kind of juice though. Go to the dunker spot where we get 6 minutes out of Matisse Thybulle destinations. This is what we do. Anyone else? That probably Charlotte.
Probably makes the most sense for him. Steve Clifford.
Yeah.
Type of wing defense. It always circles back to Charlotte with you, doesn't it?
Hey, you know, there was a stretch last season post All-Star break where the Charlotte Hornets were the best defense in the NBA. But anyway, thank you, Daniel, for the question. Steve, do you have free throws?
I have a couple. Nahivas Duncan.
No. Oh, wow. I don't know what to do with that. Okay.
Do Laker fans still believe Mo Bamba is a generational big, or is that done now?
I love how much that irked you. I would imagine that means it's done. I think it's cool.
Okay. It's reported that Kawhi Leonard and Paul George are on board with James Harden becoming a Clipper. Is on board for Kawhi Leonard just double tapping the thumbs up on a text?
Yes. First, to answer your question. Second, I think it's less about being on board and more about being on court. So if they can get that portion together, I think this fit will make a lot more sense.
The board man on board? Is that what you're saying?
There you go. Yeah, we did it.
How quickly until we get a Van Gundy and Van Gundy broadcast on a different network?
Ah. Oh, Lord. That's not the talent that I thought would be making the TNT jump. I'll leave that one there. But, oh, man, I'm not sure. Follow-up question. What would be the best game for them to do together?
Pistons Thunder.
Oh.
They need just enough youth, just enough execution, just enough talent, just enough wiggle room.
Got you. And worst game would just be Clippers Mavs, wouldn't it?
Yes.
Okay. I'm glad we are in agreement.
Is the bit that Miami just gets Jay Crowder now?
Shoot, man. Jay Crowder might be playing point at this rate. I don't know. Oh, that might just be the bit, which would be hilarious. Also, secondary free throw. Is Haywood Highsmith just better than him?
Than Jay Crowder?
Yes.
Right this second, no.
Okay. Okay.
No.
But, okay.
How many players are having a better season than Nafisa Collier?
Ooh. How many players are having a better season than Nafisa Collier? So we have the big three of Stewie, Age, AT, in whatever order you want to put them in. I'd say Jackie's having a better year. So I think that would put Fee at 5. Honestly, that might be the list for me. I think I can get the fee at top five this year. That might. Yeah, I think that's the list.
Okay. Whose playoff run do you believe in more, the Lynx or the Storm?
I need to see Gabby Williams back in the Storm uniform. I will go with the Lynx right now. Also, I'm glad you brought up the Lynx. What a joy it is to watch Diamond Miller play basketball. Welcome back. Gone for a long time because of the ankle injury. Comes right back, 18 points. Just driving all over the place, post buckets. Not welcome back, Diamond Miller. What a joy. But yeah, probably the Lynx. Okay. Oh, man, Jewel Lloyd, she's really good. Yeah. Well, Lynx until further notice.
Okay, that's all I had.
Okay. I emptied a clip on my free throws earlier this week, so we'll bring those back next week.
You don't have any?
I felt like we had an hour 10, brother. That's why I was like, hey, let's see how many you got.
All right. All right, man, do the outro.
Thank you for listening to this episode of The Dunker Spot. We are on Apple, Spotify, Google, I guess not Stitcher at this point, Podbean, insert podcast app here. Wherever you get your pods, you can find us. You can follow me on Twitter at NikaiasNBA. You can follow Steve on Twitter at SteveJones20. Join the Dunker Spot Twitter community. We're having fun discussions in there and also just sharing tweets that we don't want to talk about on the timeline. So that's fun if you want that kind of thing. Join us for our online Dunker Spot watch parties. Especially important in light of, one, the W season is happening right now. Two, we are about to have some California Classic, some Utah Summer League games coming up next week. So if you want to tap in for those, come rock with us. Live analysis. We watching hoop. We talking hoop. Also some nonsense in the chat, but, you know, we get through it. So if you want to do that, the link should be hyperlinked in your description. So just click on that, enter your information. No shenanigans, and I mean it. If it's not hyperlinked, just copy the link into your browser, paste that in, again, into your information. It's free, no shenanigans at all, and I mean it. But beyond that, we'll be back next week for some W and also some free agency reactions.
The hashtag is big shenanigans, folks.
Sorry.